Well, I'm going to take you from that to a little bit sober message. How's that? Are we living in the last days? That is a question many people seek to find an answer to. It is a question I have been asked as a preacher by many, many, many people. Are we living in the last days? I've often wondered, why does a person ask the question? I don't want to sound crass, but part of me thinks, well, if you don't think we are, would you live differently? If you do think we are, would you live differently? Are we living in end times? Now, I do understand that when people read their Bible and they hear the phrase, the last days, and sometimes hear them connected or the return of Jesus Christ connected to things like wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and famines and world chaos and different world leadership and spiritual leaders that set themselves up in high places, if you will, to be adored by people. And when they ask, so doesn't that all mean that we are living in the last days? Is this the last generation? How soon is Jesus going to come? Well, I can't give you a quick answer for that one, so I won't. Here's what I will tell you. Acts chapter 2. Day of Pentecost, Peter's speaking. He and the apostles were talking and praising God, and everybody was hearing it in their own language. So it was really amazing to all of those thousands upon thousands that have gathered there to hear that. And there was some question around, you know, had they been drinking, which obviously the answer is no. No one makes good sense when they're drunk, let alone speaking in tongues. So that was the obvious wrong answer. And then Peter, though, says, this was happening, what you're seeing right now, is what Joel prophesied about years ago. And he begins to quote the book of Joel, in which he talks about in the last days, God will pour out his spirit among all flesh, or all people, that is, upon their sons and their daughters, and they will dream dreams, they'll have these visions. And so Peter is saying, we are in these last days. When Paul would write some of his letters, Paul would write about these end times or these last days and certain things that would happen in a man of lawlessness and all these other things that are going on that will take place in the last days. But Paul wrote as though they were right then, and that we who are alive will be caught up together with the Lord in the air, as if that generation. John, a fair amount later, probably 30 years or so later, 25 to 30 years, would give us the book of Revelation. Right near the end of the first century. And in that book of Revelation, John would lay out for us this cosmic spiritual battle that also seems to be happening on earth and in heaven all simultaneously. And having this affliction of God's people on the earth. And he would take us as we come to the end of the book of Revelation to this coming back again of Christ and the power in which he would come. And there are people who would say to me, well, Jeffrey, I hear everything you've just said. But doesn't it prove then that Jesus, because he talked about end times, almost like it was that generation. And Peter, and Paul, and John, weren't they all wrong? And if what they wrote was wrong, how can I put any faith in this Bible that you talk about? Because obviously they weren't the last days. We're still 2,000 years in existence from the time that that was written. And again, you do come back, and there is some degree of interpretation. So let me please preface that. Of what does Joel mean by last days? What does Paul mean by last days? What does Jesus mean by when the time comes? What does John mean in his book of Revelation? What is it that they are actually speaking of? And if you look at it in days as in the accomplishment of whatever it is for God's purpose, then what you have seen is God's purpose has been accomplished in different ages. So there is what is often referred to as called the patriarchal age, okay? The age in which God would speak directly to the people like he did to Adam and Eve, or he did to Noah, okay? Speaking directly to the people, to those forefathers. But that age did come to an end. And then there came this time of the prophets where God would speak to the people, but he would speak through the prophets to the people. But that age came to an end. That time came to an end. And Jesus comes onto this earth. He lives this perfect life. He teaches us how to live. He goes to a cross, and he does so for the express purpose of taking away our sin and allowing us to then become free from sin. He is buried in a tomb, and then he is raised on the third day, allowing us to come through a resurrection, giving us life eternal, so I can have my sins forgiven and eternal life. And when Jesus ascends into heaven, a new age began. A new time began. And it's often called the Christian age, or the age of the church, in which the accomplishment that God had designed for the church and for Jesus would take place. And when that accomplishment finished or was accomplished, when that was fulfilled, then you would be at the very end of the end times. So there were all of these ages. So this Christian age that Joel was prophesying of is really what we would call the age in which there is no other age to come. Let me put it that way. There's nothing after this timeline. You had your patriarchs, you had your prophets, and you've had now the time of Christ in the church. There is no other age to come. So we are in the last age or the last times. And that fulfillment that has taken place as we go through the church has brought us to the end, to where Jesus could come. I want to read to you from 2 Timothy chapter 3, which is where we're going to be today. Because we've been walking through 2 Timothy. We're going to continue on. We're in chapter 3. Paul says to Timothy, "But understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty." We're going to get into the rest of these verses in just a moment. But I want you to think about it this way. If time marches forward and we come through the time of the patriarchs and through the time of the prophets, and we come through the time of the church, we have come this edge here. We have come to the last days, meaning Jesus could come at any time. The time hasn't changed, but direction now has. So I am still living in the last age. Christ could come at any point in time. So I went through the process of coming to the last age. I am living in this last age, and we continue to live in that end times, those last days. And Paul's saying to Timothy, I want you to understand that these last days, in these last days, things are going to get worse. And things are going to be so bad that I want to just, Paul's going to say to Timothy, outline for you what things will look like when that accomplishment of Christ has taken place, the accomplishment of the church has taken place. What is it looking like at that point in time? I'm going to go ahead and read these next couple of verses, verses 2 through 5. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasing, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. I'm going to stop there for just a moment, and I'll come to verse 5 here in a minute. I believe that God has wanted, and I will go as far as to say desired, every generation to believe that they are in the last days, the last time. And he does so because God wants you to live, wants every generation to live in the expectancy that Christ is coming back. So I made the comment at the very beginning. Let's just suppose that God spoke directly to you. And he says to you, you will live 20 more years and then you will die. Get your house in order. You've got 20 years and then you will die. He said that directly to you. You have no doubt that was God. Let's just assume that for a moment, okay? Year one, how do you live? Well, I've got 19 more years to live, actually. Year two, year five, year 10, year 15. Let's jump to year 19 for just a moment for the sake of this. How do you live in year 19? Well, did Jesus mean literally 20 years as to the day? Or was it in the 20th year? Am I in that year now? Do you live life differently if all of a sudden you said, my time on this earth is just about at its end? My guess, as most of us would, most of us would take that teaching, that thought that says, okay, I have less than a year to live. And I think we would look at life, live life, talk differently, reach out to family differently, reach out to friends differently. I think we would do all of that because we believe that I have less than a year to live. Why do I think God has allowed every generation to see those wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and famines and people rising in power and spiritual power and political power and always to think, well, maybe we're living in the last days? Because he needed us to live in that sense of urgency. Because he knew our laziness if we didn't. God knew, at least for me, that if I was guaranteed time, I would waste as much as I could until the very end and then try to get all my ducks in a row. That's me. That may not be you. But I would say I think I'm pretty normal with other people. Paul says to Timothy, I want you to take a look and see what life is like in the last days. And he gives us this list. Do these things happen in the world around us today? Are people lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to parents? And that's really not looking at the young children here, by the way. That is really talking about how adults treat aged parents. That's really what it's talking about here. Are people ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable? All of these things. Is that happening now? Yes. Does history record that that happened in the first century? Or the second? Or the third? Let's just jump into what we call the Middle Ages and the Dark Ages. Did they ever have wars and famines? Well, let's just jump into an age of enlightenment. Was there ever difficulties did people set themselves above all others? Every generation fits these words. Every generation does. All Paul is saying is, as we deal with these end times, Timothy, what you need to understand is don't be looking for the world to be great, because it's not. And if you're looking for something that says, well, I'm going to have this new earth, this new life, this new rapture, this new beginning for me, I can hear you. But if you're looking for that here, you're missing it. Because I can guarantee you that in the last days, which we are living in, bad stuff happens all the time. And it does. But the part that makes me I should have put that in yellow. The part that makes me have difficulty here is verse 5. Having the appearance of godliness, but denying its power. I look through this list, and I can hear truth to the point that other passages also make perfect sense to me. Because in the last days, when Paul says this to Timothy, when these days come and these perilous times are going on, there are going to be those who have the appearance of godliness but deny its power. The Apostle John would write in a letter that they, speaking of these people, went out from us, the church, but were not of us. As in, they were never saved. Paul would say to the church in Corinth, Satan can appear as an angel of light. No wonder his servants appear as angels or appear as servants of righteousness. They're not righteous. It makes sense to me now when Jesus says to those who say, Lord, Lord, didn't we do all of these things? And he says, depart from me. And here is Jesus' phrase to those people, I never knew you. I never had a relationship with you. And he calls them workers of iniquity. Because the bottom line is there are people who say, okay, I'm a Christian, but I can live however I want. Paul's statement to Timothy is in the last days, what people are going to do is they're going to say or look the appearance of godliness, but they're going to deny the power of godliness. Meaning, no transformation is going on in their life. So I'm going to say, I'm saved, but that all I'm looking for is a get out of jail free card. All I'm looking for is I want to go to heaven and I don't want to go to hell. Paul says there's a denying of the power of the very gospel, a denying of the power of godliness. When God goes to work in you, he changes you and me. He literally transforms the way we think, how we do things, how our view of life is, why we think the way we think. And Paul says these people have an appearance that looks good, but they have denied the very power that brings about the change. So in essence, he uses verse 5 to back up and say, this is what those people really look like. And the sad part is, I don't believe Paul is telling Timothy from verse 1 through verse 5 that this is limited to the world around us. In fact, I believe Paul is telling Timothy in these first 5 verses, this is what you will find in the church in the last days. You're going to find people who call themselves Christians, who are lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient, unholy, ungrateful, all of these type of things. But yet they're going to say, I'm a Christian. It's a denying of the power of God in our life. And that's the warning that Paul gives to Timothy. Is you need to be looking out so that you are not deceived at what is going on. So where does this take us? Paul tells the church in Corinth a quote, not from the Old Testament, by the way. Bad company corrupts good character. Anybody ever hear that before? Oh, lots of hands. Anybody's mother ever said that to them when they were a child? Ah, a few hands going up. My mom, this must have been her favorite verse, okay? Because I got quoted this verse a lot. What Paul is saying to the church in Corinth is the people with whom you associate, you become like. So if you're associating with bad company, it's going to corrupt your good character. It will. In verse 5, when I ended that in 2 Timothy, the very last phrase is, avoid such people. I had a friend once tell me, avoidance is easier than resistance. And I thought, I get it. Trying to resist the evil, but yet live in it and amongst it in such a manner that I am fellowshipping it, let me put it that way, Paul says it's going to change you. You don't believe me? I think I've used this before. How many of you do watch the news? How many of you watch it at all? Okay. How many of you have a favorite news channel that you watch? Here's the thing. Most people who watch, and I'm just using the news, but whatever. If you're watching the news and you have a favorite channel, do you think that those newscasters influence the way you think about politics and life? I'm going to go with yes. Okay? I'm just going to go with yes. So if the only thing I listen to is whatever station, guess how I'm probably going to have a worldview? It's going to be through the eyes of that news station. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just trying to prove to you that one set of character affects your character. It just does. So Paul is saying to Timothy, then you better avoid the bad. And he says it to the same to the church in Corinth. Avoid those people because it will change who you are. 20-some years ago, the first time I was in Africa doing some teaching, I was in Nairobi, Kenya, and I was at a college. And it was a tech school run by Christians. It was a good-sized little college there in Nairobi. And so they allowed me at that college, and it was a faith-based school, to any of the students that wanted to could come during the lunchtime, and we would just talk and have a Bible study together. And so I was there for a couple of days. I was actually working in somewhere else, and I happened to know who the administrator was, and he said, just come and we'll announce it to the students at chapel that if anybody wants to go and just spend some time with Jeffrey, they can do that. So I had this group of young people come and meet with me. And we just started chatting. And I said, I really didn't necessarily prepare anything for today. So if you've got some questions, I said, I got my Bible with me. Throw out some questions and let's just talk for a little bit. Now, this is 1996, okay? 95, 96, somewhere in that time. And these kids are 18, 19, 20 years old. And they said, in your country, are people our age allowed to date without somebody else being around them? I thought, I'm in trouble now. Because now we're dealing with culture. We're not even dealing with scripture. And I said, I think that there is wisdom that is given to us through our parents on how we try to build a relationship with other people. And I think you need to listen to some of that wisdom that is going on. And there was a girl, and she said she was 18 years old, and she said her boyfriend wanted her to move in with her. This is 1996 in Nairobi, Kenya. And she said, I just don't know what to do. I asked her. I said, are you a Christian? And she said, yes. I said, do you want to go to heaven? She said, yes. I said, do you think that that young man and what he's asking of you helps you to get to go to heaven? She said, no. I said, I'm trying to figure out where the problem is here. You know what you want. And he's taking you down a pathway you don't want to go. But I love him. I said, I get that. I get that. But here's my bigger question. Do you love Jesus more? Because if you do, then you have to ask yourself, does this company that I am keeping, and we went to this verse, does this company that I am keeping help my character with God? Now, I let her to do whatever she was going to decide to do. I wanted to bring her to Scripture. Paul says, avoid such people. God sent Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh. Let's wrap this up. When God sent Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh, Aaron throws his staff down. Remember that? And it becomes a snake. Do you remember what else happened there? There were magicians in Pharaoh's court, and they threw their staffs down, and they became a snake. Now, we love to tell the rest of that story, which is Aaron's snake ate all the rest of the other snakes. That was kind of cool. You would have thought, okay, that should have been a done deal. But it's not. It's not with Pharaoh. And so God, through Moses, tells Pharaoh, I am going to send plagues upon the land of Egypt so that you can see my power until you let my people go. Plague number one. The magicians of Pharaoh are able to do the very same thing. If you're going to turn water to blood, the Nile River into blood, just think for a moment. That takes up a lot of the water. So your proof is going to be, I'm going to take what little water we have left and I'm going to turn it into blood. Man, I would have thought the better power would have been to say, I want to go turn the blood back into water. I would have thought that would have been more powerful. But they match what's going on. The second plague, they match what is going on. The third plague, a plague of gnats. The Lord said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth so that it may become gnats in all the land of Egypt. And they did so. Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth, and there were gnats on man and beast. All of the dust of the earth became gnats in all the land of Egypt. Now listen to this. The magicians tried by their secret arts to produce gnats, but they could not. So there were gnats on man and beast. Then the magician said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. Even when they were trying to match all that God was doing, and they thought that they could not. Paul says to Timothy, I'm going to read just the last couple of verses here. Just as Jannes and Jambres opposed Moses, so these men also opposed the truth. Men corrupt in mind and disqualified regarding the faith. But they will not get very far, for their folly will be plain to all, as was of those two men. Who are Jannes and Jambres? The Bible never tells us. The Jewish tradition does write of those two men and names them as the high magicians of Pharaoh's court. Now, granted, that's Jewish tradition. It's not biblical. But it seems to me that that is exactly what Paul is referring to Timothy. As he's taking Timothy back to that time and says, looks can be deceiving. Just as Jannes and Jambres opposed Moses, there are people that are going to be opposing truth. But they will have a look of godliness. But they're denying the power of the godliness. And just like with Jannes and Jambres, their end too will be made clear. Looks can be deceiving. And your job, I guess I should say, our job as Christians, is to truly look and see what is true. Because it's not your truth and my truth. There is the truth. And the truth is the only truth that counts. Because you can have your truth. And you can look godly. But if it's denying the power of God, then it's not the truth. The truth is God's truth. And it's the only truth that counts. And the question is, are you deceived by the world around you? Because the day in which we live, the perilous times, the end of times, or are you saying, no, I'm going to see through that. And I'm going to hold on to God and the power of God. We can help you to do that. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?